Welcome to The Double Up. I'm Shannon Hughes.
And I'm Rachel Tilley, and we're here to serve as the voice of women surfing.
This week, we're back after our extended holiday break. We discuss the North Shore season, talk through the 2022 heats of the year, preview Pipeline, catch up with Keely Andrew on her retirement, and review Katie Simmer's latest edit, Toasted.
Shannon, welcome back to the Double Up. Welcome back from our extended break that ended up going all through January, and happy 2023 to you and our listeners.
Happy 2023. It's great to be back talking to you because we haven't even really spoken in the last month, but I'm excited to get a little catch up in and then dive into all of the things that we've missed in the world of women surfing since we last spoke to you.
Yes, lots has happened over, mostly in Hawaii, obviously with a big winter happening over there. And it's been really great to watch and really great to just kind of have some time unplugged for me. I have like super unplugged. Obviously, we haven't been recording the past month. I have not posted anything on Instagram since like mid-December. I have just been like away from it all. So time to get back to work and happy to actually be chatting back on, I was going to say the phone, but happy to be chatting back on microphone with you.
Back on the microphone. Well, I was just thinking, I haven't posted on Instagram since October. Oh, but that's just how I do Instagram. Really casual drop-ins here and there. And I just thought I would let the audience know that I'm currently recording this with my foot propped up on the desk because I stepped on a bee 3 days ago and have a newly developed bee allergy that's never been there in my life of being stung by bees. My foot is double the size with a massive rash It hurts really bad. So we thought, why not record today? Because I cannot do anything else and we need to get back into the rhythm so that we can track with what's happening for the rest of the year.
Yeah, we also thought, why not record today? Just because we need to. Women surfing is calling and we need to talk about it.
Okay, so highlight of your time away?
Well, I guess I would say all the travel. Not a lot of surfing has happened for me over the past 6 weeks just because I spent California in for Christmas. What? I spent Christmas in California and we had so much rain, like unprecedented amount of rain. And that kind of kept me out of the water. And then I flew back to Australia, was here for 2 days, and then just spent the past week in New Zealand, which
we
were in Queenstown.
Jet setter.
I know. It was my first time ever to New Zealand. So it was so beautiful. And what I just did not expect was obviously it's summer there. And
Same as Australia.
Yes, I know. But there's snow on the peaks. So that like flying into Queenstown and even just in and around the South Island of New Zealand, you can just see snow like glaciers sitting at the top of the mountains. And I was not expecting that for summer. It was so beautiful. I had a great time and I had booked to go skydiving while I was there. And the one day it rained out of the 8 days I was there was the day we had booked. So they canceled on us. And so instead I did this like bungee swing thing through a canyon and it was awesome.
That sounds pretty fun. I went skydiving years and years and years ago when I was just a little 18-year-old, and it was pretty scary. But I think I would probably do it again because it was like kind of a calming feeling.
Yeah,
so I'm sad you didn't get to experience that.
Yeah, but you did not come bungee jumping. And last time I went bungee jumping, it was actually with you.
That's right.
Well, you took me.
I drove you to the bungee jump and then watched you go.
Yeah, you were like, well, I'll watch from the sidelines.
That one scares me. It's like a rubber band. No thanks. But if there's a parachute involved, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, it was. I thought that the swing would not be as scary because I've already been bungee jumping and it was kind of the same realm. And it was just as scary. I was able to keep my calm pretty much until I was walking out to the bridge or the, you know, whatever, the platform. And then it started hitting me like, oh my gosh, I am about to jump off this thing. And that is actually like, no matter what, I think if you're just looking off the edge, unless you're like, I don't know, Matt, McGilvery or something who just goes jumping off of things. I don't think you can just not be scared. Like, just at least that nervous energy, you know?
I think it's a healthy thing to be scared in those situations.
Yeah. Fight or flight. And yeah. We've learned in multiple situations, I am flight.
Yes.
So highlight
Run,
of your...
Yeah. Dive away.
Highlight of your break.
Well, I was just thinking about this whole like sort of stress feeling, you know, all of that kind of anxiety that comes with doing something extreme like that. I have not experienced anything along those lines in weeks. It's been amazing. Like, I've just been at home, sleeping in my own bed, cooking food and surfing out front, which has been really nice. I haven't even like had like that feeling rise up about being scared that there's like a shark in the lineup. And most of the time I have that like all the time. And so it's just been this really pleasant off time, like past Christmas, been working in the cafe, juicing a little bit for the cafe, which has been fun.
Juicing as in like juice diet or like you make juice?
No, not juice dying. Like I make juice and we sell
not
it at the cafe.
Not juice dying. Yeah. Juice dieting.
Sorry, dieting. No dieting in this household, man. We eat heaps of butter and fat and everything. But I have been like making juice. I'm like the juicer for the cafe and it's really fun.
That sounds like fun.
Get like, it's been a
highlight of your past 6 weeks. I make juice.
No, I just said I would give you a little update. So we haven't really talked about this. But other than that, the highlight has just been like being able to really take it easy. And I think the highlight for me has been not having that feeling of stress at all because I haven't had to like pack a suitcase. I haven't had to like rush through an airport. I haven't had to question what I'm doing with my life too much. Oh. Like that still happens, but it's
We've
not like
had
a
opposite,
continuous thing.
Opposite experiences.
Right. Where most of the time I'm living in that
doing
state.
All of that.
And I still am fully questioning what my schedule will be like for the year. I don't know what events I'm working, but that will come and I'm trusting the process because it's always the same. And so I'm really just enjoying not being stressed, which is really nice.
That's beautiful and well said.
And not being able to walk. So
yeah,
I've just laid in bed today for like 6 hours with my foot propped up.
That's no good.
And yeah, that was that. So,
well, I just finished a book where the girl got hit by a car and had to relearn to walk. So,
wow,
you
it could be
are
so much
already
worse.
Ahead of the girl in my book. It was fictional though. So okay. It's not, wasn't like a nonfiction, like hero story. It was just a story.
Okay. Not like a biography.
No.
Well, I'm sorry to hear you've been questioning life, but we'll get into that after we record the episode. Listeners, we will let you know where Rachel's at with this next week when we return.
It's an ongoing process.
Few months, we'll give you the updates.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, let's get into this week in Women's Surf.
Sounds good.
And now into the top news stories in Women's Surf. For our first news story back in recording, let's chat about the North Shore season because, Rachel, it has been pretty much all time. The surf has been really good. We have seen so many surfers from around the world just flock to the shores and get some of the most incredible waves.
Yeah, absolutely. Starting, I think, with the biggest takeaway for me so far throughout the season was the eddy. They had some of the biggest waves they've ever had in the event. And the eddy is an event that only actually, it's not one that runs year on year. It's one that runs when they feel that the conditions are right. So it's been existed for almost 40 years, but this is only the 10th time it has run since first being held in 1984. And Shannon, this was the first time women actually got to participate.
Yeah, it was really exciting. Of course, we know that back in 2017, Keala Kennelly made the list for the very first woman invited into the eddy, but it hasn't been running since she got that invite. The last time the eddy ran before this year was back in 2016.
So this year, the invitee list included more than just Keala Kennelly and also included Emmy Erickson, Paige Alms, Makani Adrique, Justine DuPont, and Andrea Moeller.
There's also a few other women that were on the alternates list, but those that were on the actual invitee list all were ready to go the morning of. So I think a few of those alternates paddled out and got some of the waves of their life. I know that Laura Enever paddled out and got an absolute bomb on one of the outer reefs. And so it was cool to kind of see what was happening. Obviously, really excited to see the eddy itself unfold, but just to like hear the conversation around the swell that had rolled through that day. For me, Rachel, was really exciting to know that there was just so much attention on that event, but then so many waves that were being ridden. And I feel like those moments, like either it's a personal moment or just for women surfing, that were unfolding all across the North Shore of Oahu for women that weren't necessarily getting that spotlight on the day, that we're starting to hear the stories of.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that swell that came through was so all time. Like I said before, it's being recognized as the biggest and best eddy ever. And so to just have six women a part of that for the first time ever out of 40 participants total. And it was, you know, not to have them included for the first time ever in just kind of like a, in an average eddy. I mean, not that there's ever an average eddy, but, you know, to for one that is so monumental in just the history of the event is so cool because, man, the shots, the videos, the footage from that day is just, it's next to none. One of the angles or photos that was a big takeaway for me was a photo of Keala paddling and dropping into a wave. It was like side on from a water photographer, jet ski or whatever. And she didn't make the drop, like she ended up going over the falls. And the wave is so thick. It's so big. You know, I think a lot of the beach angles that I saw, you can see that it's big swell, but unless you're there, it's really hard to grasp just how large and the magnitude of it all. And so that photo of Keala really put everything into perspective for me of just going, wow, that is the last place in the world that I would want to be, is being at the top of that lip falling on a wave of that size.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. Like the amount of water that's moving over the lip at Waimea is so insane. And that's where like the danger comes with it, is that it's coming from such deep water to hitting such a shallow reef so suddenly that you just have like this mile wide, what looks like or feels like, I'm actually looking at that photo of Keala right now, like lip of water coming over with it. And so it just thinking like of like wide. The whole downtime. Yeah. Mile high, thick, maybe like thickness is more the word, right?
Yeah.
But it just like the amount of water that you then have to take on the head after the drop, like if you wipe out like Keala did, is just, it's completely insane. I was also reading a post earlier on today that Paige Alms put up, and she was saying the sets were coming through like every 5 or 6 minutes, and it was like perfectly sunny and offshore the whole day, which were just like a few of those things that as a surfer, like you hear of these really good days at all these different spots, but it might've been like just a couple hours that it turned on or something, and you were able to like capitalize on it. You happen to be there at the right time. But for an event like that to actually have had the consistency from morning to like sunrise to sunset and those sort of dreamy conditions, it would have been such a special thing to be a part of, to be, well, I wouldn't have wanted also to be in the water because Paige just, well, what we got to like see from the footage of it as well in Surfline was just that there was so many closeout sets rolling through. So terrifying.
Absolutely.
But like what a special experience to be part of it on a day where like all of the elements came through, like the sun was out, the wind was the perfect direction, like it didn't shift to that kind of sketchy, bad, moody space in any way. It was just like really beautiful and allowed for so many good waves to be ridden, which I think was one of my takeaways, was seeing from the women and from the men that there were just so many beautiful waves ridden that were extremely death-defying, but due to that consistency in the swell.
The other event that was able to capitalize on the swell that hit Waimea around the same time as the eddy was the Red Bull Magnitude event, which we've talked a bit, Shannon, about this event before we wrapped up the podcast last year. But the Red Bull Magnitude event, reading from their website, is a content-driven contest open to big wave surfers from around the world. From up-and-comers to some of the greatest names in the sport, surfers will ride and document the largest swells to hit Hawaii this winter. 3 months, 3 iconic big wave breaks, $50,000 up for grabs. So basically, these women will surf Waimea, Jaws, and the Outer Reefs to get the best clips. And the judges will vote on it. People can vote on it. The clips are all up on the Red Bull Magnitude event page. And so far, they've been able to compete or surf, get content at Waimea and Jaws now.
Yeah, it's been so cool. And then I think also with that swell that hit for the eddy, the Outer Reefs were flaring, and that's where we saw that wave from Laura drop through. So I'm sure that we're going to see some more content like that coming out this week. One of the cool things that Red Bull is doing with this is just creating an opportunity that the women specifically haven't had in the past. So they're putting more money, more, I guess, help into the water specifically to get these women to be able to have access to jet skis, to be able to have access to safety equipment and everything they need to be able to capitalize on these big swells. So that's one of the things that Red Bull is working to provide through the season as well, is just more opportunities to actually have that equipment that's necessary sometimes to even want to go out and surf some of the world's biggest waves. And then the other cool thing that I thought about this, Rach, is that part of the judging panel is women. So there are three women on the judging panel: Megan Abubo, Rochelle Ballard, and Andrea Muller. Andrea, one of the invitees to the Eddie, and Megan and Rochelle, both former championship tour surfers and just chargers all around. And really cool, just the other day, Rochelle Ballard was out at Waimea sitting on a board, but not planning to actually paddle into any waves in any way, just kind of sitting in the channel watching her friend surf. And one of the crew out there that knew her really well said, "Hey, you should get over here and paddle into a wave today." And they kind of had that chat and in that moment decided, you know what, it all feels right, like it's the right moment. And Rochelle paddled out and caught her first Waimea bomb in about 20 years. The photos on her Instagram page is a really solid set that rolled through. And that's just something that's really cool from someone that is still pushing boundaries within women's surfing a bit later in life.
Yeah, that's so awesome. I am really enjoying seeing all the clips that have been dropped so far. I love the just pushing and the progression of it all. And I can't wait to see the more clips that come from these swells that are still yet to come throughout this season, and see who ends up on top with some of those awards from the Red Bull Magnitude.
Well, speaking of digital events, let's break down the Vans Triple Crown of Surfing, which has continued to run digital. It's pretty largely off the radar in comparison to when it was a physical event, with only 12 women that actually competed this year, along with 25 men. Carissa Moore ended up winning overall. She won the event for Sunset, or the, I don't even know, you can't call it an event necessarily, but she won for best wave out at Sunset, which is pretty sick.
The others went to Zoe McDougall, who won the best wave at Haleiwa, and Moana Jones-Wong, who won at Pipeline, which obviously is no surprise.
No surprise. It'll be exciting to see what happens with the CT kicking off there, if Moana is able to sneak herself another win, but we'll get into that conversation a bit later. I did just sort of have this thought as we just have gone into the Triple Crown conversation, and I'm wondering if Vans is happy with what's happening with it. Of course, all the social media that they post around it and the conversation is very, very positive, because they're trying to sell an idea to the surfing world that it's a great idea. But I wonder what their actual like review process will be like after this last year, with such a small number of surfers that took the time, put in the effort to have a filmer with them, to be down at the beach at every good swell, and to be able to bank the clips across multiple events. Because in order to really be in the running to win the Vans Triple Crown of Surfing, you have to have a wave submitted for every single break. And so there was only 12 women and 25 men that completed that this year.
Yeah, I have a feeling they'll probably can it. I just don't think it's having the same impact that it used to. Or maybe I just don't think you can necessarily can the Triple Crown of Surfing, but I don't know. I don't think it's working. It's not probably getting the return that they're hoping. Obviously, with digital, there's not as much of a monetary investment for Vans. So that is the only thing that I can think of that might keep them keeping it digital, just because it's not putting them out as just physical events do. And obviously, while I and a lot of people enjoy watching physical events much more, I don't know. I think if they don't see the return on the physical event, this is probably the more preserved lesser of the two for in terms of a hit for Vans as a company, a monetary hit, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah, totally. Like, it makes perfect sense if they're trying to cut budgets that they would scrap like the funding that it takes for staff for all of the different things, permits and everything, to be able to run like physical events. But you honestly just need to bring it back. Like, Triple Crown needs to be happening as real contests that we can sit down and watch over a few days. And I think that it's worth the investment. And I think too, not that we need to go into this for very long, but I just think that nowadays there is so much content that's coming out on social media. Like, we're so overwhelmed with digital content that it's all getting lost. And so although it's really cool to see some of those clips dropping, like, it's something that you have to sort of specifically look out for now, because there's just so much content dropping from every surfer and influencer and all of the things all the time that I think it's difficult to track with. And so I wonder what their actual viewership was like, and their voting as well, for the process to select the winners.
See, I think that's an interesting point, because as a general fact for my interest, I enjoy watching content more than probably just in general, more than like an event.
Yeah.
Just scrolling. I don't know. I like beautiful pieces of surfing being produced, where sometimes obviously in events you're in less than good conditions because of the waiting period and whatever the reasons are. However, I don't think we have nailed digital competitions. Like, I have no interest in watching a digital competition. I'll watch a real competition or I'll watch content. But
right.
I don't have the interest in watching and then being inclined to go and vote. I don't know. It feels more like taskful to me. And maybe that's why I don't know what kind of numbers they're getting on views and votes and stuff, like you said. But yeah, I don't know. I think people would rather go and get content wherever's good, if that's the point, because that's kind of the point of content, not going to just surf Sunset over and over and over until they finally get a good wave. You know, like, just go surfing where you want and get the content that you want, or go practice at a wave that you're actually going to be surfing in a contest at. I just think the digital contests in general don't really work from a viewer's perspective. So if Vans is able to somehow figure out how to make it more engaging and exciting for the viewer, and also make it more rewarding for the surfer who is just, like, you know, logging videos after videos, then I think it would be great. But we're not there at the moment.
I agree. You know what we could do? They could do, not we, because we have no say in this. It could, like, be turned into a surf film, and they could take all the edits and surprise everybody when the film itself drops. And it could be like a 20-minute film or 45 minutes or something. And it could include, like, the best edits. Well, I guess if it was like that, it would be like, what, 6 waves in total. So it would take about 3 minutes.
Yeah, true. Max. That's true.
With like intros and outros and credits. So maybe not a great idea. But yeah, basically our thoughts from the Double Up: Vans Triple Digital Crown needs to be rethought.
Well, Shan, the final event that has taken place on our little North Shore review over the past few months is the Dahui Backdoor Shootout. And last year when we were discussing this, they actually had an allocated women's team, where this year there was no women's specific team, but we did see women included on multiple teams.
Yeah, it was great to see that Moana was on the actual Dahui team. I think that's just such a cool nod to, like, the localism and to her being the pipe woman specifically. And Carissa Moore was on the New Earth team alongside Kelly Slater, Kai Linney, Koa Smith, and Matahi Drolet. So the way the teams work for the Dahui is that they're sponsored teams. So the New Earth team, which Carissa and Kelly were a part of, which, you know, how many world titles between the two of them? A whole lot. What, 16? That was actually sponsored by Peter King. And so every team that goes into the Dahui has to have a sponsor that's paying the bill, basically, for that team to be there. Moana chosen by the Dahui team to be represented by them. Really cool. But those were the only two women in the draw, which is pretty different from last year, which was a big thing that women were included in the draw last year. But there was, like, an actual women's team for the Dahui Backdoor Shootout, which was sponsored by the WSL and featured 4 women just specifically for that team. So this year there was no women's team, and those were the only two women to get the call up. I think they're definitely the two most deserving women in the conversation of who could have gotten that call up. So I like seeing that, but just interesting because it was actually far less female participation and conversation around that than what we saw coming into last year's season.
Yeah, I think that's really quite interesting, because obviously I just would have expected more women to try and step up, or, you know, some really keen women to try and get a brand or a sponsor to back them to create a women's team or whatever for more of that competition practice. Like,
yeah,
these are the things that we've been discussing on the podcast that the women are saying, in the fact of like, we just haven't had experience out there. We need experience. We'll get there once we get experience. And, you know, some of those people lashing out back at those kinds of comments, you know, like Kelly Slater's comment last year during the pipeline event was, okay,
that one we'll still paddle just out. Pisses me off.
Yeah, we'll just get out there. But, yeah, you know, we've kind of always come to the defense of that, giving them time. But these are the types of things that they need to be stepping up and being at to, I don't know, at least for me, to keep defending going, yeah, they just need time. This is new for them. Like, give them opportunity, give them, you know, a little grace period to get their feet in the wax and, you know, get used to actually competing at this way. Well, here is an opportunity. So I'd be more interested to talk about to some of the women on the North Shore to discuss what behind the scenes ones. Maybe it's not as simple as that, but I don't know. I think it's great that Carissa and Moana were out there. I think it's no coincidence that they were the two that, you know, were in the finals last year. And I think it will be really telling for their results this year as well. But the highlight, the main takeaway out of this shootout was Moana's wave that she got at the end of the second day. What an impressive, ginormous feat that was. Everyone is considering that to be her best wave surfed, the best wave surfed out there by a woman. And not even just for a woman, it was an insanely impressive wave. So props to Moana. Unfortunately, it did not count for her Dahui team score because she stood up like, you know, a second or two after the buzzer. So that's how it goes. But it's still all the buzz and rave of the Dahui backdoor shootout.
Yeah, that was such an insane moment to just rewatch over and over and over again, especially on what so many people were calling the best day of pipe ever. And in that clip, did you hear the siren like going past in the clip of that wave? So that was Billy Kemper, who was being taken to hospital because he'd had a bad wipeout. Thankfully, he's okay. And he competed in the Eddy just a few days ago. Makua Rothman and Kali Grace also suffered major injuries across those couple of days. So extremely dangerous pipeline, but also finals day holding just some of the best perfect shapes out there. And the fact that Moana got a part of that action was so stinking cool. And I just like, it's so funny that it just keeps happening in women's surfing right now where like women are getting really insane waves, but then something's happening to where it doesn't count. Like Sierra's backdoor barrel.
I know.
Yeah, that one that Sierra had during the Vans Pipe Masters, like just the most insane barrel, but then had the interference. So that doesn't count, but it still like counted as the wave of the event for the women. And same story sort of here for Moana, of course, just after the buzzer. But some really exciting stuff's been happening. It's getting me really frothing to watch the CT kick off.
Absolutely. I think it will be exciting to see who does step up to the plate and who's been putting their time in at Pipeline now.
Well, speaking of Pipeline, Rachel, let's go straight into our second topic for the week and give a pipe preview, as well as discuss the fact that we have our fantasy teams up and picked and the Double Up Fantasy
League.
The league is all there, and we've got some people that have entered in. So thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, well, I think the first ones to chat about real quick are who is out and who is in due to injury. So Joanne DeFay is out, Teresa Bonvalot is in, and Sophie McCulloch is out. And so therefore, Alyssa Spencer is in.
Yeah, it's such a bummer that Joe and Sophie are out, both of them with like ankle foot injuries, and their announcement posts unfortunately included both of them wearing a boot on their foot so they can find some solace in each other. But yeah, such a bummer that they're both out for the first event. Hopefully they'll be healed up and ready to come back for Sunset. We'll just have to wait and see what happens with that. But I love that Teresa Bonvalot is getting that shot to compete in the first event because she is that replacement surfer on this year's tour, which means that as soon as anyone's out of the draw, she's the first one that gets that call up. And after coming in so close to qualifying this year, like being actual equal in the points with Sophie McCulloch, it's great that Teresa is getting that chance to go from the first shot. For Alyssa Spencer as well, she was that one that I just thought was a guarantee to qualify this season and unfortunately didn't. So love that she's got that call up as next in line.
And of course, we have Moana Jones-Wong receiving the wild card this year, which obviously would have been a shock if she didn't. No surprise that she did. And sneak peek into my fantasy team, it definitely includes Moana.
Okay, so Moana's also obviously in my fantasy team, but I'm just going to put this out there and say that I put Carissa as my power surfer because I just don't see Carissa letting this one go.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, three finals in a row now, and she's probably extremely hungry for a win. So that's a very good call.
Yeah, so Carissa is my power surfer pick for tier A. I picked Courtney Conlogue as well after her win out at Tahiti and just knowing that she, I think having that win is going to maybe get her back into that space where she's pretty consistent across heats. Like I feel like there is that edge to somebody who has been in the mix but just hasn't found that like winning feeling or that rhythm in a while, getting there again. And I'm really thinking Courtney Conlogue could have that in the heavy waves this year specifically. So I could see her doing well at Pipe. I put Gabriella Brine because she's just so cool. And then Moana as my tier C surfer. How about yours?
Well, I also have Carissa Moore also as my power surfer. I then have Betty Lou Sakura-Johnson because I really loved her performance at the Pipe Masters. I also have Tatiana Weston-Webb, which, Shannon, looking at the forecast, it's currently largely favoring backdoor. So that may be not a good pick because the goofy footers are not going to have the conditions necessarily on their favor. But I just have a feeling, like I keep, even after seeing that, I still just have this feeling that I'm including her. So I'm going with the feeling. And then of course, Moana Jones-Wong, like I said before. So those are our four surfers picked. Obviously we only have the two differentiating us, but can make all the difference. Shannon, do you want to run me quickly, since we're just talking about fantasy in general, about your men's team?
Yeah, and I think this will be an important part of it. Like, we don't typically discuss men's surfing, but when it comes to fantasy, you got to play both sides of it in order to get the most points. And for those listeners that have joined into the Double Up League, we're all going to be playing it together. So my picks for the men's side, my tier A is Jack Robinson and Miguel Poupeau. Jack, because even though he's from Western Australia, he is basically a North Shore local. He has so much respect out at Pipe and other waves there. And he's like one of the best barrel riders of all time. Miguel Poupeau had such an incredible run at Tahiti last year. So I just felt like that was well-deserving for that tier A. My power surfer, I've just gone with the cliche of picking John John because that's where I'm at. I might change that before competition kicks off. I'm not sure, but he's in there as my power surfer right now. Kelly Slater is on my team because he proved me wrong from not picking him last year and he won the contest. So Kelly's back. Gabby Gabriel Medina, I've got him in there as well as Sammy Poupeau. Sammy being just a rookie from last year, but he had a great season. Gabriel, former Pipe Master. And I think he's going to be really hungry actually being back in like fully this year and want to win a world title. And then for my tier C, I picked Josh Muniz, who has been a Pipe winner before, like on the QS level of stuff. I think he's a really good wild card to go with. And then I picked Ramsey Bokyam as well, mostly because my fantasy name is Shanzi Hukiam. And so I've kind of taken off from Ramsey's name. Nice. But also because he's like full power surfer. And I just think that he's someone that should have been on tour for a long time. And I'm excited to see how he goes. What about yours?
Well, mine differentiates a little bit from that. Tier A, I have Griffin and Jack. So similar reasons for yours with Jack. But Griffin, in the same ballpark, he's been spending a lot of time at Pipe for many years now. And I think can have a really great performance. My Tier B, John Florence, Gabriel Medina, Seth Moniz, and Matthew McGilvery. John, he's a local. Gabriel Medina, he is, like you said, going to be so hungry, which is why I made him my power surfer.
Yeah, that's a good
one. Seth Moniz, he got second place last year to Kelly. And I did not go Kelly this year because I just feel like that was amazing what he did last year. I don't think it will happen again, despite, you know, what I would love to see for him. And then Matthew McGillivray, because of his performance that he had at Tahiti last year, I thought was really solid.
Mm, yeah, that's a really good pick.
Thank you. Tier C is I've also picked Joshua Moniz and Ezekiel Lau. So a lot of times I fill this team up with Hawaiians. I have four Hawaiians on there just because Pipeline is such a localized spot for the Hawaiians. They definitely have that advantage growing up at such a critical wave and understanding it so much that people from other places around the world don't necessarily get unless they consciously spend a lot of time there. So that is my team. I'm feeling really good. I just have this feeling. So let's see where it takes me.
Well, now you have me questioning. I hadn't really paid attention to the countries.
No, this
I'm not going to copy your team, obviously.
You cannot.
I'm just backing what you've said. I'm saying, hey, you had better logic than me. I have a bunch of Brazilians on my pipe team, which I feel like they're worthy Brazilians, but usually that wouldn't make sense. Mm. The Hawaiian logic makes a lot of sense to me, but I'm still going to go with who I picked because that was just, you know, sat on the porch today with my foot propped up so it wouldn't swell anymore while I watched the storm roll through, and I picked my pipe team and I'm sticking with it.
All right. Well, let's let the best lady win.
Which likely will be one of our listeners and not the two of us.
Yes, absolutely. Or
it'll be Aaron. Producer, absolutely. Producer man wins. Okay, so last thoughts, Rach, on fantasy before we move on for the rest of pipe thoughts is just the fact that you're actually able to reset your fantasy team or set it for the very first time if you haven't done it by the start of competition after the elimination round. And that's a pretty smart thing to do, either like having a little assessment to see, okay, these surfers that I picked did really well, these guys didn't. And if you wait to pick your teams or at least to kind of re-pick after the elimination round, you can see exactly where everybody, what the matchups are for the round of 32 on the men's or the round of 16 on the women's. And that's a really good thing to do because you can make sure you're not like picking two people on your fantasy team that are going to match up that early in competition. Now, the tricky part, and this gets me out on every single event that I worked last year, if we ran straight from elimination round into the following round, I always missed my moment, or I would like, it would slip my mind that I needed to repick my teams or maybe even pick my teams for the first time. So I did very poorly in fantasy overall at the end of the year because I didn't make that switch right on it. So you kind of have to be on it. It's probably safer to set your teams ahead of time, reset if you're able to. And that's my last thoughts.
It actually just dawned on me that it is quite ironic that you are the one instructing to people how to play fantasy when I'm not saying I'm any better. I forgot so many events last year. So this year it's a serious competition. We will make a prize at the end for the winner of the Double Up League. So we are still figuring out what that might be, but there will be something. And other than that, Shannon, any more thoughts on what to expect of the actual event?
My only thoughts are back to that conversation that you kind of kicked it off with about the conditions favoring backdoor rather than pipe itself. So having a thought about that or think about that, I don't know which of my grammar is correct or incorrect on that sentence. Betty Lou, Molly, and Carissa have really proved to be backdoor specialists. And so between Pipe Masters or during the Pipe Masters this year, those were kind of like some of the standouts. And so I could see those three doing really well. And then Tyler did win a Pipe Pro contest in the past. And so that is really impressive to keep in mind. And yeah, I'm just curious to see what happens. Mostly my thoughts on pipe is, are we going to kind of have that same feeling that we did with like the rookie class last year where the rookies were going to kind of take control? Or is it going to be flipped back to where those veterans are really solid? Like they kind of had this last year, the 2022 season, to like kind of shake out all the weirdness of a change in tour and in their career, specifically for the women's tour and what that's looked like forever. And I'm feeling more like the veterans are really going to be pretty solid, and that some of those, not that we have heaps of rookies, but like that newer blood that's now been there for a season, I think it's going to be really interesting to see how they go. And I'm excited.
I'm in the opposite camp. I think that the younger generation, this new blood on the tour, is going to just continue to get more confident and dominant on the tour. I think the veterans, especially at Pipe, will have some proving to do still. I feel like the people who have been seeing drop clips and do well in these other events that have been happening in and around at Pipeline have been all the younger generation. So I don't know. I think there were passes that last year going into Pipe, it was like kind of like I was saying before, just like a wait and see, let's give the grace period. That is shrinking. And so I expect out of this event to see more stepping up, to not see another day like the last day one last year at Pipe. I think there's been opportunities for more experience. I think the onus has been on them for longer now. And so I just expect to see more stepping up. But I think the stepping up we're going to see is going to come more from just that younger generation because of in and where they're at in their career.
I love that. I'm really excited for it. This is going to be a good year on tour.
Always excited. We're excited.
We're excited. We're really excited. We love women surfing.
We do. We do. Our third topic this week to discuss, Shannon, are the 2022 heats of the year. So our thought process behind this was the fact that WSL just held their annual WSL awards. And generally each year they would do a heats of the year award at that awards and, you know, go through 3 to 5 heats and then award the surfers in the best heat of the year. So they didn't actually have that as a legitimate award this year at the award ceremony. However, WSL did post still 6 videos on social media around what were the heats of the year. 5 of them were men's heats and only 1 of them were women's heats. So we just thought that here at the Double Up, we would talk through the best 5 heats of 2022.
Yeah, we got to give the women their Let's run give for the heats women of the year.
Their 5 heats of the year and the heat of the year.
So we'll go through these 5 picks in chronological order, starting out with the quarterfinals at Sunset, which Rachel, you'll remember, featured all 5 of the rookies on last year's tour. Really incredible that they had such good runs through all the way to the quarterfinals. My favorite pick of it and one of our favorites together was the Gabrielle O'Brien and Luana Silva quarter, where Gabby ended up taking out the win, but both women dropped 8-point rides for some of the best turns of the event and what we think is some of the best surfing we've seen at Sunset Beach in years.
Our second installation for Heats of the Year is between Molly Picklum and Tyler Wright in the round of 16 at Margaret River. So this one was a must-advance situation for Molly to actually make it past the mid-season cut. And in that, she really rose to the occasion. She got a 9.17 with one of the best women's turns in competition. With that win, Molly knocked out Tyler Wright, who had just before previously won the Bells Beach event. And in that heat, Tyler had an 8 and a 5. And so Tyler clearly was surfing well. It was a great back and forth. And it was really awesome to see Molly rise to the occasion in that kind of must advance type of situation.
Our next heat of the year goes to Caroline Marks and Carissa Moore, which was their quarterfinal matchup in El Salvador. That was such an exciting event because it was Caroline's first event back after her break from competition. So she hadn't competed at all in the 2022 season. Carissa had been having kind of a good year, but she hadn't really had, I think, the finishes that she wanted to. And so it was this really interesting heat that rolled out where Caroline ended up getting the win and had one of the like best returns that we've seen to competition, I think, being that it was her first event back. She went fully wave for wave. Neither women got into the excellent range, but it was just like back and forth throughout the entire heat. And Caroline ended up losing out in the semifinals, but I think that was just such a significant moment for her to come in after what she'd gone through the season. And for Carissa, like, she had the yellow jersey already, but had already had that conversation around, like, is she really performing at the very top? Is she able to kind of hold the yellow jersey without even having to be in her best space? And to see Caroline take her out in that heat was pretty exceptional. And Caroline was back on tour.
Our fourth addition into this was the final on J-Bay between Tati and Tyler. We included this one because they were competing at huge pumping J-Bay. Also, this was the heat that WSL listed out of their six videos that they included in their one video of the women's heat.
The one video. This was the one CT heat, or I guess we watched finals together too. So, okay, there's a couple huge moments that I watched as a fan of surfing this year, like not as a commentator of surfing who's also a fan. But J-Bay, I was there on the ground and got to watch it like on the sand with a bunch of friends. And Tati had some insanely good waves in that heat. I felt like Tyler performed well, but maybe not like at the top and wasn't really matching what Tati was bringing, which is obviously how Tati got the win. But it was really impressive. And for her to come through as a goofy foot surfer on a perfect right-hand point break, she solidified herself on a very small number of goofy footers that have won at J-Bay. And for our fifth pick into the heats of the year, it was the Brisa Hennessy and Lakey Peterson quarterfinal at Tahiti, which was such a nerve-wracking heat to watch unfold because it was a little bit slow. It wasn't like super consistent with a ton of waves, but the tension and what was actually on the line was the final five spot for the chance to win a world title within a couple of weeks. For Lakey specifically, that quarterfinal, if she lost the quarterfinal, she would lose her final five position. For Brisa, if she won, it wasn't a guarantee that she would be in. She'd have to get some more work done in the semifinals, but she was going to be that much closer to keeping her spot there. And it was just the most tense heat because it wasn't that consistent. Like, they both had a single good wave and couldn't find a backup, which made it incredibly tense. And ultimately, Brisa got the nod with a small backup score and her final five position.
So, Shannon, with all five of those detailed, do we want to pick our individual favorites for the entire year?
Yes, we want to. Can you pick first?
Okay. So I will have to say that my favorite was the heat at Margaret River between Molly and Tyler. Just obviously there was fantastic surfing, but my favorite heats are always when something is on the line. And, you know, similar to the Brisa and Lakey one, that was probably my second. Something's on the line and a surfer has to really rise to the occasion, and Molly being a rookie, getting a 917, it was just really exciting, good competition.
Love it. I like,
and yours?
I'm just like mind surfing the Molly 917 right now in my head. I just see it playing over and over again with my eyes closed. So mine, I'm going to go with what I've kind of talked about throughout this entire year. I've been asked this question a few different times in some different interviews. And I'm going to go with the Gabby Luana quarterfinal at Sunset. And I think for me, it was the lead up to that moment was the fact that the rookies had proven themselves. They'd all made it into the quarters, which was extremely exciting. When there was sort of some doubt from people, you know, like, are they going to be able to show up and perform amongst the world's best, like amongst those veterans? And they all did. And then to see both Gabby and Luana put down some of the best turns that we'd seen in women's surfing in a long time, I thought that was really exceptional. So I'm still holding on to Gabby and Luana as the heat of the year. For our next topic this week, I actually feel kind of sad having to introduce this because it's about the retirement of two amazing women that, in my opinion, should still be on tour or have the opportunity to compete at a high level. Keely Andrew and Malia Manuel have retired from competitive surfing. And we won't be seeing them at least put in that effort to make it onto the championship tour again.
Yeah, those are two really big names that have been in the mix for quite a while on the CT, now out of the mix. And it came as a surprise to me. I did not see either of them retiring anytime soon just because they have been around for so long and they're surfing so well. And again, Shannon, this keeps going back to your point that I think I'm probably jumping the gun here in what you were going to bring up if I didn't right now, in that we should be seeing more women on tour, because
Amen.
To see these two women retire just feels like it feels premature, in the sense that they definitely, if the opportunity was there, have more steam left in the tank, I think. But I hope for the best for both of them.
Yeah, I think that you have summarized it perfectly. It's exactly where I was going to go, that there's just not enough opportunity in the numbers for the women's side. And so I think for both Keely and for Malia, they're looking at it in a very realistic lens, which makes a lot of sense to why they would step away now. There's a really good article out there for anyone that's interested in reading on DukeSurf.com. DukeSurf is a great Latin American platform for surfing. Lots of great articles and footage coming out in the Latin American community. But Pablo, who runs DukeSurf, put together a great article about this specifically with these two women, for Keely and for Malia retiring. And the title just said, "The World Surf League has to seriously contemplate restructuring its women's tour. Why are the best women surfers retiring at their career peaks? It's because they've come to realize that they have an impossible tour to confront." And I think a lot of that conversation goes to the numbers specifically on the women's side, where we've seen a lot of positive change. We've seen equal prize money entered into the conversation a few years ago. We're now seeing equal tours, which is awesome to see them all at the same waves, getting that opportunity. But that lack of numbers is a really confronting thing for the women's side, and it's making it less and less realistic for women to be able to find themselves in a position where they can make a career as a professional surfer. So great article on Duke Surf. Now, a lot of his articles are in Spanish. He actually wrote this in Spanish a while back, just recently republished it as one of the newer articles in like what would come up as one of your top articles in the recent newsfeed in English to make it more accessible and I think to get more eyes on it. And I just think it's a really important part of the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a great article. And into further insight, Shannon, we actually got the opportunity to, you got the opportunity to have a chat with Keely Andrew on this.
We kind of decided instead of just chatting the retirement that we'd love to dive into your actual career a bit to really give it like some celebration, because it just seems crazy to me, Keely, that you're finished, but you've also had a really successful career, and it seems like a pretty natural time for you to be transitioning into the rest of the life that you've been working towards.
Yeah. Oh, no, for sure. I think it's something that was still, it was something that was coming longer than I expected. I think it was already sort of shifting even before I knew, but yeah, just with everything happening now in life, it seems like the perfect time, and I'm really excited and looking forward to it.
Yeah, crazy. Well, before we get into that more, let's dive straight back to the beginning. So you had a full 5 years on the championship tour, which is huge. Congratulations. During that time, we got to see some of the most interesting changes within women's surfing. We got to see the inclusion of equal pay, the reappearance of J-Bay and Tehupo on the women's calendar. I know you didn't get to actually surf in Tahiti, but really cool to see it back in that mix. We also got to see the emergence of Surf Ranch, wave pools coming into the conversation, as well as the loss of Fiji from the women's tour. What were some of your favorite moments from those years that you had on the championship tour?
Yeah, first off, thanks for the nice wrap up. Yeah, obviously, I look back at those 5 years, and it's not until now that I've kind of left that bubble that I can really take a look and appreciate what I had as a female professional surfer at that level. And like you said, I got to experience some pretty cool things. The equal pay came in as well while I was on tour, and yeah, surfing in a wave pool 3 times, going to J Bay a couple of times. So it was very special for me. And I even got a contest in Fiji before that fell off the calendar. So
good.
Yeah. Looking back, I had a really great time, and I feel like I really got the best of it. I experienced a lot of transitions, but also, yeah, got really lucky with like the quality of the tour at the time. I think it was really cool to see it change so much.
Yeah, you got to really experience some of those prime years before even more change came in that's maybe caused like a little bit of chaos in this last season. Let's talk about some of those really huge moments that you had, talking about the finals that you made both at Trestles and on the Gold Coast for your championship tour final experiences. You also had those two big QS 6000 wins in New Zealand and El Salvador, with a few pro junior wins thrown in the mix throughout your career. I'm assuming that it's probably safe to say that those were your competitive highlights, like those finals and those big wins. What did those mean to you?
Yeah, absolutely. They were my highlights for sure. And like I said before, I don't think I really appreciated them at the time. And because everything moves so fast when you're on tour and you're in this little bubble that you're constantly thinking about the next event or the next heat or the next plane you got to catch. So you never really get a chance to kind of sit back and really take a breath and appreciate what you've done. So, yeah, to do it the final twice in my career on the CT was definitely highlights. And at the time, it felt so easy, but looking back on it now, it seems like it was such a difficult thing to achieve. And obviously, I had quite a successful junior career, and then yeah, everything kind of happened so quick on the QS that it all just feels like a blur.
Yeah, did it? I mean, I remember, I think, talking to you a few years back about you making that jump onto the championship tour and it being just a bit of a surprise. Like you said, it happened quickly from the QS. You kind of maybe exploded into this career where you were one of those surfers, similar to like a Sally Fitzgibbon story, where you have so much athletic talent and ability across so many sports that you had to sort of make that choice going to surfing rather than maybe pursuing tennis or something else that you're more interested in. Did you feel like that came, you know, what was those early moments of realizing like, okay, this is actually happening for me. I'm going to just give it a go.
Yeah. It's so funny that you say that, because I've never been that 10-year-old girl that wanted to win a world title. I didn't know you could win a world title until I was 15.
What is that?
I didn't actually know.
I was so the same way. I was like, what's professional surfing? I don't know.
Exactly. And it wasn't until a teacher at my high school opened my eyes to it and said to me, look, you should consider competing in surfing. And I did not know that that was possible, because all my attention was on tennis and cricket at the time. So surfing was more of, you know, the weekend activity that you do with your parents and your siblings. And it was fun for me and I loved that. But tennis and cricket were definitely my main focus at that stage. And yeah, it kind of just, I didn't want to go to uni, to be honest with you. I didn't know what I wanted to study. So I put my sports psychology degree basically on hold for a year. And I said to my dad, I just said, oh, look, I'll have a go, just because I started making heats in the junior tour. And yeah, I thought I'd just have a go because I didn't want to study.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I didn't want to stand on the cricket field in 40-degree heat during the day. So, yeah, I had a go, and it was a very quick rise. I think it took me about 3 years to get on. After 2 years, I missed out by one spot. So naturally, I was competitive, and I loved the sport of surfing. So it wasn't so much about me valuing a trophy or a world title. It was more I love the sport, and I was really competitive, and I just naturally fell into it and kind of took off from there.
I'm so glad that you did, because it's just been such a pleasure to have you in our surf community for so many years. And I know that you're still planning, you know, I was checking out some of your Instagram posts and your retirement announcement, that you're still planning to do some of the Aussie legs, but just not pursuing that full, you know, challenger series like mantra to qualify and to really rule your world for a while. Are you still planning to just be competing a little bit?
Yeah, I'll still compete here and there. Obviously, a lot less as I transition into my life after competitive surfing. I still am really competitive as a person. And yeah, I like to push myself and still compete. And the young girls coming through still to this day are kind of pushing that next level. So I'll still throw my hat in the ring and see what happens.
So good. That actually reminds me. So Luke Mashman, a friend of ours from the tour, he was sharing this story about you as a young kid playing cricket, but on the boys team at school, and that you kind of like had, you went up to, is it pitching or bowling? I'm still very confused on the cricket
bowling.
Side of things, because I'm like a full baseball, grew up like as a Dodgers cap on my head, like by birth. Can you just share that story with us about what it was like being on the boys team?
Yeah, well, cricket, obviously similar to surfing when I was, you know, in my early teens, it's a male dominated sport. So obviously there wasn't a lot of girls teams to play on, and I have two older brothers. So it was only normal for me to jump in and have a go with the boys. And I think I started playing for my older brother's team, just filling in, and I thought it was pretty good. So I started playing in my own age group against the boys, and yeah, they definitely underestimated my bowling, if you will. And yeah, I ended up taking quite a few wickets and really, yeah, enjoying the cricket side of things.
So good. Now, thinking about that in the context of sport, you know, globally, surfing has put in some pretty incredible things on the women's side. Talking, you mentioned it before, the changes that you got to experience coming into the tour, kind of pre and post equal pay era. How much do you think that that impact has really had in that change within your career, within women's career, being that you got to experience that before there was equal pay in the conversation and experience some of those events with equal pay online?
yeah, it was pretty special. I still remember the day at the Surf Ranch when it was officially announced and there was the press conference. Obviously, there were mixed emotions surrounding it in terms of other people's opinions. But it's really cool to see that kind of money getting injected into this sport as it develops with the next generation coming through. I think it gives girls the opportunity to, I guess, travel more and develop their skills as well as they can still go to school as well. You don't necessarily have to be 15 and getting on tour these days. You can definitely finish high school and then jump on and still make a career out of it with that kind of money involved. And obviously, it's still the girls at the top that are going to be able to live off their earnings. But it's really cool to see it filter down, especially for me. Like, I wasn't at the top by any means, but I can still live comfortably and pursue other things in my life without having to stress and worry about where I'm going to get my money from.
That's so good. It's just been such a cool thing to see that change come through. And for my side of things, to be able to see more women included in just different jobs behind the scenes. Which just wasn't really something when I started. It was like there were very few women wanting to work in the contest space. And now there's so many. Like, I think that the women's commentary team specifically for Pipe the commentary team is actually equal split for the first time ever. There's four women and four men on the team, which is really cool. Kind of a wild one. But I'd love to know what some of the more challenging aspects of the tour were for you. What are some of the things that you maybe won't miss by getting to stay home now?
Yeah, it's funny because I went to get on a plane the other day to go down to Melbourne and I really didn't want to get on the plane. So it came too soon. I definitely won't miss jumping on a plane every second week and time away from home, family and friends. It's obviously pretty strenuous on relationships and friendships. So I'm really looking forward to just being in the one place, living out of my cupboard rather than my suitcase.
Amen.
Getting the hang clothes up, do the washing, have those, really comfortable things, cooking, baking, all of it. I love it. Mowing the grass, just the simple things. I'm really looking forward to just being at home. And obviously I've made some really good friends on the tour over the years, so I'll miss the friendships. But yeah, I'm could not be happy to be sitting on the sidelines about to watch Pipe start.
That's so good. We're kind of based back in Australia now. Also, for the first time in a long time, we like have a place that we're going to keep for the year. We're not going to like move in and out and sort of like just live out of suitcases. We unpacked our suitcases like officially about a month ago and they're like empty in the room behind me in our office here. We don't have any storage for them, but we have cupboards and it's like the best feeling to not be like down on the ground, shuffling through things going, I thought that was there, but maybe it's the laundry. Maybe it's outside on the line. Like, I have no idea, but it's just right where I put it and hung it up. So nice.
Not like crinkled. It's all nice and straight. Yeah.
Can kind of like look slightly nice anywhere you go, like a little professional. It's so good. Now talking about that time away from family and friends, which is just so difficult for anyone living in this surf tour lifestyle or even just like a professional sports aspect. One of the really special things the WSL did was introduce the numbers onto the jerseys. And I believe that for you, for number 12, you wore that number because that was the year 2012 when your mom beat cancer. How special was it for you to be able to spend so many years after that traveling on tour with her and to be able to just share all those moments together?
Yeah, it was so special. Obviously, it was a pretty scary time. And I think 6 months, it was really, really scary. So I think the other day she actually got her 10-year clearance, maybe. So we're still doing really well here.
Stoked.
But yeah, obviously when you have a moment like that in your life, it opens your eyes to obviously bigger things. So you have a greater appreciation for what you're doing. And I knew that, you know, there's a once in a lifetime being on tour and why not take one of the most important people in my life with me that just did one of the biggest things in her life. So yeah, it was so special. We've got so many stories and we talk about it and look back and we're just in stitches laughing the whole time. So I could not have picked a better person to travel with. And obviously my dad was able to come when he wasn't working. So to look back and have those memories with those guys and obviously everything they did to support me to even get there, it's so nice just to be able to get them to the contests and experience it all together.
Yeah, to be able to actually just witness it firsthand.
Oh, yeah, it's so different. And obviously they get an opportunity to kind of appreciate the size of it all. Like, there's a lot that happens behind the scenes that people don't even get to see. So yeah, my dad definitely enjoyed watching it live more than on the computer when he couldn't see the waves coming. So yeah, it was just such a fun time.
Yeah, probably healthy for like his heart level and his stress levels to just be able to actually like see the scene. Okay, there's a set coming through, not just like you bobbing up and down on the screen.
Yeah, just to get the bigger picture. Definitely kinder on the heart and blood pressure.
So funny. Well, talking about that, it's a great segue into just the fact that like the tour is a pretty huge thing now. I mean, the new pathway for surfers to the championship tour seems to be much more beneficial from a regional perspective as you jump from regionals through to the Challenger Series. That's like its own tour now. From there, you jump onto the championship tour, as opposed to in your QS years where you're really gunning hard, just random QSs all over the planet. You're on a different plane, like back and forth to the same time zones, but just, you know, every other week. Really, really challenging. With those changes now, it does seem though like the Challenger Series itself seems like a pretty tough nut to crack, especially with no seeded rounds and those straight up 4-person elimination rounds. I'd love to hear your perspective about competing on the Challenger Series over these last couple of years.
Yeah, it's incredibly challenging. Obviously, you get the girls that have fallen off the CT, they're in the mix as well. And then the really high up on the Challenger Series, and then kind of that next wave coming through. So there's no such thing as an easy heat. It's all incredibly difficult. I did it for 2 years, and I think my best result was a quarterfinal, and that was my last event in Brazil. So it's incredibly challenging, but I think it brings out the best in surfing. It definitely, the cream rises to the top, and it's a great opportunity for those girls to, you know, have a crack and end up on tour. And obviously Sophie McCulloch from my hometown did that really well. And
so
it's
good.
Really fun. Yeah, it's so fun to see the Sunny Coast still on the map with Isabella as well. And yeah, you see them when they're 10 years old. I remember seeing Sophie at my local beach when she was 10, and to see her now qualified for the tour, just going through that path from the juniors to the QS to the Challenger Series, just to get that, I guess, experience competing against those older girls and that higher quality. I think it's really beneficial, and it's what's going to progress the sport.
I love hearing that. What are some of the things you're most looking forward to watching this year, since you'll be able to kind of watch with your bag of potato chips?
Yeah, on the couch, just reclined. I look forward to the whole season, to be honest with you. I guess the most frustrating part for me now is that pipe starts at 4:30 in the morning, and I'm not that committed, so I can't get up.
And you don't need to be committed anymore, aside from like fantasy teams.
I know, absolutely. I don't have to wake up at that time anymore to catch a plane or surf heat. But
yeah,
I'm looking forward to the whole season. I think there's a lot of fresh faces that are going to really mix it up a little bit, keep the older girls on their toes, and obviously the events are incredibly challenging. And yeah, it's really exciting. I love watching the men's too, so. Yeah, I'll just be the super fan on the couch. Just couch judging now.
So good. You'll be there just like pinging texts to people. Yep, I thought you got this score. Actually, I don't know. You kind of got overscored on that one. Like, what's been going on with the judging panel?
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's a whole other level now.
Yeah. Well, it is kind of crazy. I'd love to tap into a little bit more on the numbers with you. Because I feel like arguably you're in your current position due to the fact that the CT still only has 18 women on the tour. With only 10 that get to stay on past the mid-season cut. So that's 8 lost at, well, minus the wild card, so about 7. And then only 5 jump up from the Challenger Series. So it's this really small number of women on the world scale that actually get to be like at the top level and earning the best prize money to be able to continue pursuing this. I'd love to know what your thoughts are overall on maybe the WSL needing that restructure and the current numbers that are on tour. Do you think that there is a necessity to increase that capacity on the women's side of the field?
Yeah, it's incredibly challenging now. Now with that mid-season cut, I think, like you said, it's about 7 if you include wild cards and everything else. And then the top 5, and that includes double qualifiers. So
yes,
it can go nuts. From yeah. So it's pretty crazy about. I think 5 years ago, if you asked me the same question, I probably wouldn't have said that you want to increase the number on tour. I wouldn't say the depth was there.
Right.
This day and age, absolutely. I think 24 would be an appropriate number. The talent on the Challenger Series is outrageous. You know, Bronson McCauley, one of my good friends, didn't get back on tour this year, and she's one of the craziest surfers on the planet.
Just insane. So, like, as soon as she gets to actually just surf G-Land, surf Tahiti, like, she's got a world title in the bag.
Absolutely. And it's crazy. It blows my mind that girls like that aren't on tour, but then the girls that did make the tour are just as good. So, yeah, I think there's calls for bigger numbers on tour for sure. Making that cut is incredibly difficult. You miss one event and you basically count your whole season over, which is crazy just because the level is so high. So, yeah, I think if I was, yeah, absolutely. Bigger, more numbers.
Yeah, and I guess I hadn't even thought about that, like, in the current conversation of the fact that if you miss an event, that's your dropped event. Like, Steph last year at Pipe missed it because of COVID and then hardly scratched herself past the cut, which was, like, you know, her story was insane from last year. But any injury, I mean, Sophie McCulloch with the ankle injury, Joanne's also out for the first event of the season with an ankle injury. Both of those are going to have a lot tougher of a road to make that midseason cut just because, like, that injury is working so intensely against them now.
Yeah, it's incredibly challenging. And a lot of surfers, injury or not, tend to surf into their season. So they might take a couple of events to warm up and then, you know, by 6, 7, 8 events, they're starting to really fire so they can get into that top five. But now with those 5 events, if you're not on from that first event, it's incredibly difficult to make the cut. And I think it's going to, I don't know whether it's such a positive thing in regards to people pushing themselves beyond what they need to. Like, Sophie's come off a pretty big Challenger Series campaign, a short off season, and then straight into the CT. So it's a pretty demanding season for those that do the full 12 months.
Yeah.
So I think if you have a niggle, you can't really afford to take time off and properly get back to 100% unless you've made the cut. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where this goes and what direction it takes. But yeah, hopefully it's all for the best.
Hopefully we see some real positive out of it. That's such a good call too, about just the momentum that builds through events, right? Where we would really see some insane performances in the back half of the season in previous years before the cut was introduced. And I feel like that's something that's really, it's going to be really interesting to see how the rookies go with that, because for them, it's this brand new thing. Like, for Sophie, it's a brand new thing. For last year, for the season, with the 5 rookies on tour, only Gabby Bryan made it past the cut. And they all had some really exceptional moments. But I feel like that learning curve now is actually weighted against the rookies. Not that it was maybe ever in favor of the rookies, but, like, it seems sort of that much more tough because that learning experience, they're not going to have a full 10 events in the year to just even learn what it's like to, like, have everything at that bigger, better level of stuff.
Yeah, that level from, you know, the top of the Challenger to the bottom of the CT, it's another quite a big jump. And then you've got waiting periods, you've got calls, you've got cameras in your face, you've got fans, you've got media speculation, like, everything is just blown up. So it's quite a confrontational thing when something's just thrown in your face like that and you're not expecting it, because you as an athlete don't see it because you're not in that bubble. So when you get thrust into that bubble, it just blows everything out of the water, and suddenly it's not as easy as just surfing a heat. You've got other things around you, other noise. You're surfing against your idols that you've looked up to your whole life. So a lot more plays into it than people think, and it's going to be difficult now for just 5 events. When I qualified personally, I enjoyed doing the QS alongside the CT because I could kind of build momentum that way. Because a lot of the CT girls would do the QS, so you get that same level. But now it's difficult. It's just 5 events straight off the bat.
So wild. It's so much. How do you feel like, so do you think in your kind of learning to balance that space of that jump to the championship tour, like you said, it's such a huge jump where before it was those QSs to CT, now the Challenger Series in between. Do you sort of credit some of the space that kept you able to stay up with it all and develop a lot was that time being able to bounce to the QS, which meant surfing maybe against some surfers you were more familiar with, even had better friendships with? Was it that time of having your mom on the road with you? Like, what were some of those things that maybe this next generation can take alongside of them from your experience to really help make that ease of transition a little bit better?
Yeah, I think just having that opportunity to surf against those girls, but not on the CT. Obviously, it's a lot more difficult now with the setup, but yeah, just having that chance just to even see them, you almost want to free surf around them just to kind of get their level, like their intensity.
Yeah.
Because it's very different and they will behave very differently, as weird as it sounds. So it's the same. And if you're warming up for a CT, you know, they'll come and surf with you and you might, they might try and get in your head when you're not even aware of it. So,
right. And you're not even surfing in heat. You're just like out there trying to get a couple good waves.
Exactly. So it's little things like that. But as you mentioned, having a very good support crew with you, it's very tricky to do it by yourself. Like you said, was fortunate enough to have my mum. So just to have someone there to kind of remind you that it's one event, it's surfing, it's not going to determine your self-worth. You're so much more than that. You're a person rather than just a surfer or an athlete. So yeah, just the little things like that will go a long way for sure.
I love that. It's such good insight. And so, yeah, just the experience that you've had with it could help so many of the young ones, I feel like, coming through. I do want to just throw this out to you. If the WSL, and I kind of feel like they know that they need to make this change, like there's more conversation. It's starting to happen to outside of just the women's groups, I feel like they're chatting about it or media kind of stuff that's happening. But more mainstream surf media is now starting to throw out that question about equal numbers. And I feel like the WSL, like it's got to be something they're working towards. Like I'm just like channeling all the positive thoughts that like maybe by next year, 2024 season, this is going to be like a huge announcement alongside like the Olympics at Tahiti, you know? Would you consider return to like proper competition and trying to qualify if the women's numbers were moved up to that of the men's?
No, I would not.
Okay, cool.
I am taking the word retirement quite literally.
Nice.
Yeah. No, I've had my 5 years. I've done everything I want to do.
Yeah.
I'm so satisfied with my career. And yeah, I would love to watch. I'd love to see it. So yeah, fingers crossed sometime soon it'll happen.
So good. Well, let's talk about what's next for you then. So you said you kind of felt like retirement has been coming for a little while. What have you been doing to prepare for that moment? And yeah, what's next in line?
Yeah, obviously 2021 was a pretty challenging year for us on tour. A lot of people think, oh, you got to travel the world. You're so lucky you got to leave the country. But yeah, it was pretty hard. Two hotel quarantines, home quarantine, getting locked out of my own state, let alone the country. So I think everything that happened in that year and then to have it the way it ended, it was kind of emotionally probably one of the most draining things I've ever done.
Yeah.
To the point where that following year, I kind of just didn't want to do it. I just didn't want to know about it. Just didn't want to get on a plane. Didn't want to surf. Didn't want to compete. But then I got a little bit of motivation. I was like, right, I'll give myself, you know, this 12 months. I'll do the Challenger Series. I'll have a go. And then about halfway through the year, I got to the stage where I wasn't enjoying it. Like I didn't, when I lost, I was devastated. When I won, I was relieved kind of. It was like, oh,
interesting.
Thank God I got through that heat. But when the event was done, it was a relief too. It was like, oh, okay. Like I survived. It's over. So it took a lot of joy out of the sport for me. And I wasn't enjoying surfing at home. I just didn't want to get in the water. Competing wasn't fun. I didn't have any motivation to go and get better. So then it kind of felt very natural. It was a really good sign. The whole idea I did it in the first place was because I loved it. I fell out of love with it. And yeah, I was already studying at that stage part-time, sport and exercise science. So I knew that's what I wanted to do. So it wasn't like I had that fear of not knowing what was next.
Right.
And I've got these dreams where I want to take that as a strength and conditioning coach. So I think my next phase in life is so clear cut that it excites me. And
that's so
awesome. I'm really looking forward to it. So I'm just going to keep studying and obviously I'm working, I'm doing some surf coaching. So yeah, it's just, that's my next journey and it's really exciting.
That's so amazing. I love that story of that. I remember that with Bianca Batendog when she was on tour as well, and she was getting her accounting degree, and she kind of had this like agreement with her parents when she was young and qualifying that they were like, you can do this, but you also have to study. Like you had, I think they maybe gave her 1 or 2 years without having to study. And then she had to go straight into like at least doing some part-time online work for it. And I think that was such a good thing for her in that transition post. And really similar actually in chatting to her about that retirement after the Olympics. The same sort of feelings that you were going through of just being really ready to be done, like not having that excitement to want to compete anymore, not even really wanting to get in the water when she was at home. And now to see like post that what's been happening with her life, which is kind of muted. It's not in this public space anymore, but it's really beautiful to see that kind of opening up. So I feel that same sort of excitement for you. Like you have such a huge future for you in front of you in that sports world and working with Groms or adults, like whatever that looks like, you're going to be incredible coach and incredible, like you're just going to have such a good understanding of what the body needs and those movements, as well as I think the mental capacity, which is really exciting. And yeah, I wish I was living up in Noosa to be able to get some training in from you.
Oh, thank you for your kind words. Yeah, no, my parents were the same. Like I had to finish high school before I could travel.
Okay.
So they were very obviously academic, like pro education. Yeah. My two older brothers are incredibly smart, both engineers. So yeah, you can compete, but you have to have a backup plan because, you know, you're not going to surf for your whole life. And if you get injured, then it can very easily just disappear. So yeah, I was the same. I actually deferred. My parents said, okay, we'll give you a couple years. Yeah. And it happened. And then, yeah, so now I've naturally just come back to studying and I'm really enjoying it. I think it's the right time because I'm really enjoying it and it's exciting. I'm going to meet some new people. And yeah, I'm just so happy.
That's so good. I just love that like excitement is there for you. Oh, so stoked. Well, what's up for you for the rest of today?
Oh, for the rest of today, I'm going to hang out with my niece. I've got, that's another thing that's so exciting for me. I've got a niece and a nephew. So a 2-year-old and a 1-month-old, I think.
Wow.
So yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's so cool to see my niece's personality develop, and I'm slowly trying to entice her onto a surfboard, but yes. Parents aren't overly excited about that just yet.
I had the same battle with my brother. I was like, come on, she's 4, she can get on a surfboard, she'll be fine. No.
Oh gosh, if she's not on a surfboard by the time she's 4, that's getting problems.
They also moved inland, so now there's like slightly more, the kids are a bit older, but yeah, I've got 8 nieces and nephews between California and New Zealand, so it's like the love for them too. I totally get where you're like so frothing to just be around them and to be able to get them like experience, and to be the aunt means you can like step back too when they're too tired and they just need to like go home. But you can also like introduce every fun thing into their life. It's the best thing.
I just want to be the cool aunt. I want to totally. Be the person that she wants to come and hang out with. But yes. I'm pretty sure I'm already not cool enough.
Well, that's so good. So you got her around today. And thank you just so much for taking the time to chat with us on the Double Up. And we're going to keep watching your space to see what's coming. And I saw that you ran last year, some girls camp stuff. Are you going to be doing some more of that as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to stay in that space. And we actually did one this year as well with boys as well. So gender camp. And yeah, it's been a lot of fun to see the next generation coming through on the Sunshine Coast. And yeah, I'm just going to stay in that space, do some coaching, and keep working with the next talents. So watch out, world.
Watch out. Keely Andrew is coming.
Yeah, Sunny Coast is taking over.
Oh, I mean, you guys already are. It's so good. Oh, well, thanks again. Really appreciate the chat.
Shannon, it's been fun.
Our final topic for this week, Shannon, our fifth and final topic is the new edit dropped by Katie Simmers. Dropped, directed, edited by Katie. It's called Toasted and it is now on StabMag.
So good. Loved it. I thought that the surfing was really fun in it. Girls are absolutely ripping. For those of you that haven't seen it yet, it includes sections with 4 of the most standout female surfers that we have had so many conversations about. Obviously, Katie Simmers, Molly Picklum, Sierra Kerr, and Bella Kenworthy. Did this great trip down to Mexico. And there's a whole lot of footage throughout the film with her little brother, Timmy Simmers, as well as lots of other guys that she has kind of been underneath the tutelage of, I would say. in her surfing career through her sponsorship connections and friendships and things. All edited by Katie and produced by somebody else. All the credits are at the end of the movie, but it kind of started out with a different editor in mind. And in the end, Stab decided to give Katie the freedom, the time, the ability to edit her own movie, which I think took a lot more time than she expected it to, but I enjoyed the final product. So the first, two main thoughts, and then I've got a couple other things I want to say about it. First thought to it, like out of that first segment specifically with the four girls, was that it was like the young version of surfing, which was one of my favorite clips or surf films that came out last year before that, with Steph, Macy, Tyler, Nikki, and Dimity. Still probably my favorite surf film of the modern era, as far as the women's side of things goes. Absolutely loved it. But I just had those same feelings of like, this is that next crew, that next generation that is really into their surfing. They have a lot of fun together. They don't eat great food for their bodies, but they're really into music and surfing and just having a good time together. And that was kind of my gut feeling, like out of the clip straight away, which was really fun. I don't know if you got that feeling at all, like in reference to surfing, Rach.
No, I actually thought it was the exact opposite of surfing, in my opinion. If I'm honest, like I would have compared it more to Jaleesa Vincent's edit that we talked about last year. And I feel like if we have a spectrum, surfing is, let's say, on the right. And Jaleesa Vincent and Katie Summers, like Jaleesa Vincent's on the left and Katie Summers is like mid-left, you know? If we're looking at a scale, like they are totally opposite for me. Obviously, all featured great surfing. But since you just like so pointedly asked if I compared the two, no, I do not.
No way. Well, I do. I will say past the first segment, then I got all Jaleesa Vincent vibes out of it. Like with the edits, the way the things were coming, like all the different things. Like it was just the artwork, the edit, everything was like Jaleesa Vincent. But just that first little clip, you know, it was like a really sweet
with all the women,
5-10 minutes, girls sharing waves, getting little barrels, like looking cute.
I see it.
So good. Getting also, though, how many airs were there in this clip? It was amazing. Like so many good airs. So my next thought to this, these are the two notes that I put down in my phone while watching it, was surfing with the exclamation point, because surfing has an exclamation point. Second thought, does Sierra Kerr know how to put her hair in a ponytail? Or is this something that her parents will forever have to do for her? Because
what?
I just feel like I am always watching her mom or her dad put her hair into a ponytail.
Oh my gosh,
which
I did not notice
featured
that.
In Toasted. It was
That's so funny.
On the broadcast during the Vans Pipe Masters. And I'm sure it was in Stab High at some stage this year. It's just like, it's a very
so
sweet
funny.
Thing.
I
but I just thought that was really
that.
Funny.
I have not caught on to that.
Now
like
just
being
pay attention
a thing.
To it. Yeah, I can't wait. When she makes it onto the CT, like how often are we going to see mom and dad putting her hair back?
That's so funny. That's really funny.
Great. I could see that being something that your parents would do for you still.
Never. Never.
Like in
they
a prep,
never
a heat prep?
Nope.
Not with the clip
did.
In your hair? Before
nope.
you like won your duct tape paddle race this year?
No, the clip is mine. No, my dad always said that I need to surf with my hair in a ponytail, but I always put it up myself. So there are similarities there. They're not too far off each other, but I can say I do my own ponytails. But I love that. I think that would actually be the biggest power move to get onto the CT and still have that going. Like, just kind of continue it on now. Everyone's like, you know, laughing, but laughing with you, not at you type of thing. And she should just like own it and be like, yeah, this is my thing. This is what's going to keep going.
It's like the surfers that put the headphones on with certain music. Like she's just like, mom or dad's putting my hair in a ponytail. And then it just like instantly sets the tone for like,
exactly.
Get out there and rip,
like
do the best airs,
moment.
Get the best barrels. Don't get any interferences. And that's going to be a good day, you know?
Yeah, wow, you would be an amazing coach, that aggression.
Well,
I'm just going
I
into
also
heat
feel
mode
like
that.
Sierra has that aggression inside of her specifically.
For sure.
I've seen those moments, and so I think that's the energy she's pulling from the ponytail.
Must be.
Okay, my last thoughts on Toasted, unless you have anything else to add to that great conversation, was that there was a follow-up article put out on Stab Premium for those of you that pay for it. Words by Coral McDunphy, who is a close friend of Katie Simmers. They grew up together. Coral's a few years older, now writes for Stab, works in the surf industry after completing university. But really cool interview, which to me was like probably the best because it was, I actually hadn't realized who had written it until I got a little bit farther into the article. And I was thinking, whoever is writing this obviously knows Katie very well. And it's not like somebody coming to it that's kind of outside of her space. Like this is somebody in her world. And I really loved it. It's a pretty long article, but like really good, candid conversation. And I could almost like hear the responses coming out of Katie's mouth. Like I could hear her voice saying the things. And it was really good insight to like her process, to why she wanted to make a women's surf film, which was partly because she wanted to like, well, she had always had this goal in mind of like making an edit like that. That was like one of the big things she wanted to do with her life. And then for her to actually end up in the editing process was something that was quite overwhelming, but she really enjoyed. She talks about like how often though, because she's not a computer whiz geek, like the guys in the stab office that are doing this for a living, she would like accidentally delete footage and then they could never find it again. And like little things like that, they're really difficult, or she'd choose music and then eventually the music could never get approved. So she'd like edited a whole segment to the music and then the music had to get deleted. And so they had to like rework heaps of things. But it just was this really cool insight to like her process with that. And yeah, I just am, it's made me even more of a fan of Katie Simmers than I already am.
Yeah, I think that's, was my takeaway. I like that she edited herself. I like that she just made it her own thing, you know, and owned it. It's something that she can be proud of and hold up high. And obviously she had some amazing surfing in there. So that is the next edit on your list, is to go watch Toasted, currently on Stab.
Somewhere in there, I read from somebody, maybe it was in the comment section, that her next thing should be crust. Then I was thinking after that, it should be bread. And we just have the whole theme.
Crust, bread. I thought crust, like, you know, like a crusty scrab, a scab.
Yeah. Well, she alludes to like what Toasted came from in the interview, which like Toasted, she said kind of her first thought for Toasted was like the toaster oven car that Coral, who wrote the actual article, drove around in high school, which was like one of those like boxy shaped cars. And it was really old and it would get like overheated and they'd leave their wetsuits in all day at school and it was like really nasty and they would say it was like toasted all the time. But then she like leads that into actually then when they're on the road, she gets really sunburned, they like call it toasted and then you can have toast. She just like starts going down the rabbit trail, like what all the meanings could be. It's pretty funny. So yeah, we'll see what the next line of bread items are that come out. And that also reminds me of like, what clip was it? One of the clips that's come out lately, I just keep thinking about Sierra Kerr moments right now. She's like in this conversation as I'm, sorry, hitting my microphone and verbally processing. She's very quickly becoming one of those I'm going to keep a close eye on because she's so great. There was that video that Katie posted. Maybe it was just on her Instagram videos from ages ago, but she put it into the article and Sierra was eating two pieces of white bread with nothing in between them. And the way she was holding it in her hand was like squishing the bread open, but she'd already taken a bite out of it. And you would think like peanut butter or like there was some ham or turkey in it. It was just plain, two plain pieces of white bread, untoasted.
That's pretty funny.
That she was eating like a sandwich.
That's straight
energy. Yeah. I mean, that will release that energy so fast, right out in the water.
Better than when I was that age, I would just have white bread and then put butter and sugar on top of it.
Oh, that's right. Sauce.
Delicious. Well, also ketchup in a hot dog bun.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of which of the women surfers has the nickname Sauce that we talked about on the podcast before. None of this is really relevant conversation, but it was one of the crew that was from the like.
Yeah, I know. We talked about we talked about them when we were reviewing Rivals.
Yes, it was from the Rivals crew. Okay, it's gone from my mind. Anyways, thanks so much for listening. Go watch Toasted. Let us know your thoughts. Heats of the year. Which one did you pick? Would you have a different heat than the five that we listed? Also, fantasy teams, good luck. And whoever wins for the year will be getting a prize that we will think of shortly.
All right. Until next week. Happy to be back.
Woohoo.
Okay, so I just got 3 fillings done, and my whole mouth is numb because I had cavities on both sides of my mouth. And now my check engine light is on, and I have to take it straight to the mechanic to drop off and explain to them in my current state what's going on with the car. And this will be fun.